It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is Tuesday, March 24th. So it's time to get nerdy. Welcome to episode 132 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the multiverse. I'm Maxion, and I have my fellow nerd and commentator, the stand-up comedian, the Chicago nerd, the man who put the laugh in the laughing tap, Lom Galuka, also known as Mr. Nice Guy. Mr. Nice Guy, how are you?
Dude, I'm doing phenomenal. Keeping a positive attitude because it is so important right now, and I've been having a good time during this quarantine, spending time with family, getting some gaming in, talking with you about some side gaming that we will be doing with a group of friends, and life is good, man. How have you been?
I've been all right. The loneliness is killing me.
Okay, now wait. We believe in quality music here at Two Nerds in a Pod, and so I don't know what that was. I mean, I know exactly what that was, but I don't know where it came from. It was definitely off-brand, and I apologize to viewers who are used to hearing us reference quality songs. Mac lost his mind for a minute.
Clearly. But I'm doing okay. Although I have no real neighbors where I live now, which is both a blessing and a curse. On the one hand, it is kind of nice that I'm, like, you know, isolated, so I'm not getting, you know, getting, like, catching other people's stuff. We're not packed in like sardines, but it is one of those things where, at the same time, I am just the only person for... I'm being somewhat hyperbolic when I say miles. I've got a lead on some new employment opportunities, so things like that might be changing pretty soon for me, and I might be getting a little bit more, you know, personal interaction. Hopefully, though, it waits until a lot of things have died down. But
yeah, man. Well, dude, I'll be honest, because of the quarantine, I don't have a ton of awesome stories to share about me telling jokes, me beating down hecklers verbally, me getting out and doing stuff. All of the stories really deal with gaming, which we talk about later, right? What we've been watching, what we've been playing. So I say, Mac, we do what we do best, and we hop right into the gaming news, my friend. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. Tell us, Mr. Nice Guy, what is going on?
There's a lot going on, and we should probably be, like, a little bit more interactive today because people are, like, sharing their quarantine stuff. Does anyone have interesting quarantine stories they want to share? Uncle Ruckus just mentioned something that he misses being able to do. He says, I wish I could go out and get food and stuff like that, but I would rather be playing Doom and also playing other games when I get bored of Doom or finish Doom. There was a lot of Doom in that sentence, Mac.
Lots of Doom.
And we don't like Gloom and Doom.
Well, it's a hopeful kind of Doom.
Yeah, he's talking about Doom the video game. Okay, fair enough. Also, Mac, people in the chat have said that they really liked your singing. So congratulations, even though I did not like it. I liked the quality. It was on tone. It was on point. But I'm not a Britney Spears fan.
Well, I mean, what can I say? I'm just plugged into what's going on.
Okay, well, on that note, let's move into the news. Now, let's pick up with a story that we kind of talked about last week. On stream, we talked about GameStop and some of the things that they were not doing for their employees. This story comes from IGN.com by Joseph Knoop. It says, starting March 22nd, all GameStop stores located in the United States will temporarily stop customer access to storefronts, processing orders on a digital-only basis, moving to curbside pickup at stores and e-commerce delivery only, said the company in a statement on Saturday. The news comes only a day after IGN originally reported that GameStop decided to close all California stores, following increased public scrutiny over their decision to consider themselves an essential business due to their selling of tech hardware like keyboards and webcams. Now, Mac, this story would have been a lot more interesting if we had been reporting on it when GameStop had decided to stay open. But since then, they've come to their senses and decided to stay closed. What do you think about curbside pickup for video games, man? Necessary? Completely unneeded? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know me. I'm a big fan of physical releases, but, I mean, seems at this point in time, like, not the most important thing.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of companies right now with this coronavirus that are making mistakes. And then it seems like the power of the internet is forcing them to change their mind. So in kind of an off-topic story, there was a story about the Philadelphia 76ers basketball team. Mac, I know you know about this because I know you love sports. They recently said that they were going to pay their employees, their staff, 20% less due to the loss of profits from the NBA season being suspended. They said that, I believe, today. And within like a few hours, the internet went crazy. The NBA Twitter went crazy. And then they said, you know what? We're actually not going to do that. We're actually going to keep paying everyone their full salary. And I feel like GameStop dealt with similar pressure here. They said, you know what? We're an essential business. We're going to make people stay open. We're going to make our employees come into work. There was outcry from the internet, and then they backed off. I think that's a positive that the internet has that kind of power. Would you agree with that? Or what are your thoughts, man? Should corporate stuff stay corporate?
You know, I think it's always important that to remember, I've said it before, said it again and say it again, that corporations are not your friend, and they're almost never going to make the right decision for anybody except for the profits and slash shareholders. So it is, on the one hand, real encouraging to see these about faces, but keep in mind that really the only damage you're doing is the fear that you're putting in them of, you know, of not expanding their pocketbooks. So if we say that things are bad, but then we buy the games from them anyway when they do what we don't like, then, you know, it was for nothing. That's them calling the bluff.
That's exactly it. I agree 100%. Moving on to our next news story, Mac. This is on GameRant.com. This one's a little bit more interesting. Let's just jump in. This is by Annie Clow. It says, amidst the COVID-19 pandemic, engagements are being canceled left and right to protect public health. Many are finding it difficult to cope with this newfound isolation and desperate to maintain social contact. Some resourceful individuals are seeking out new and creative ways to stay connected through games. One clever couple, after having to cancel their wedding, decided to hold it online in Animal Crossing New Horizons instead. Animal Crossing New Horizons is quickly becoming one of the most popular games for people to connect in while social distancing. Mac, you look like you already have something to say. What do you want to say about this?
I think that's delightful. I've heard before of some of these, you know, weddings done, officiated in, I want to say I seem to recall one being done in Minecraft back in the day. But I do know that this was one of the funny things that they did in, what was it? It was The Guild, if you remember that. It was one of Felicia Day's Geek and Sundry things. But but they had a wedding in The Guild, and it was quite fun. I liked it. But this is a great story. This is a smile of delight.
Good. Yeah, it's a feel-good story. That's the best way I could describe this. The article goes on to say, Animal New Horizons is quickly becoming one of the most popular games for people to connect in while social distancing. After all, what is a better escape from being locked up inside than fishing on a tropical island with friends? While some players are content to trade fruit and relax, others are finding more elaborate ways to spend their time together, like recreating scenes from movies. Reddit user, we won't get into all that. So, Mac, here's my question about this wedding that happened. Do you think that they did the honeymoon in Animal Crossing as well?
That might be difficult to do in Animal Crossing, and I think, in interest of this being a family-friendly show, should avoid answering that question.
That was a purposely silly question. Now, in all seriousness, I have never gotten into Animal Crossing. Like, I've never even been interested. Every single friend I have who is a gamer on Facebook, on Twitter, is tweeting about this game. And it's people who play games that I really, really enjoy. Do you think this is a game that you would ever be into if you had a Switch? Have you ever played Animal Crossing? What are your thoughts on it?
I have access to some of the older Animal Crossing titles, but I have quite enjoyed Stardew Valley, which is fairly similar in both, you know, gameplay as well as in a lot of the ideas. So I think I would probably, you know, based on the fact that I've enjoyed Stardew Valley, I would probably enjoy Animal Crossing as well, but I have no plans to pick it up.
Interesting. Yeah, not my thing either. But, I mean, so many people are tweeting about it, I'm curious. Well, cool. Let's move on to our next news story. This is on GameSpot.com, and this is about PS Plus stuff being leaked for April. It says just, and it's by Steven Pettit. Just a few months after giving away Uncharted, the Nathan Drake Collection for PlayStation Plus subscribers, PlayStation will round out Drake's story by offering Uncharted 4: A Thief's End for free in April. Uncharted 4 is joined by Dirt Rally 2.0, an off-road racing game that released in 2019. Both games will be free as long as you keep and maintain an active PS Plus subscription. So, Mac, PlayStation has effectively released all of the Uncharted series, the main games, for PS Plus. And I know you're not a Sony guy, but I think we could get a PS5 launch release of Uncharted.
You think so?
Well, yeah, man. I mean, I guess I don't know why they would make all of those games available unless it was to lead up to something else. Like, I believe that they want everyone to have the opportunity to play those games before the next thing happens. The only one that's not released is Uncharted Lost Legacy, and then, of course, I think it's Golden Abyss that was released on the Vita. So, I don't know. PS fans in the chat, let me know. What do you think? We getting a new Uncharted game? Launch PS5? Also, Mac, what do you think about the possibility of these consoles being delayed due to coronavirus? They're supposed to come out in December. Do you think that's a possibility? Those rumors have been going around.
Well, I mean, it's certainly possible. As a matter of fact, back in July of 2019, I suppose, pre-ordered the TurboGrafx Mini that was going to be released March 17th, 18th, or whatever. But that's been delayed. Shipments and otherwise have been delayed of that. So I can see this causing trouble. Decreased labor force, decreased people going to work means, having to push back those things. I mean, depending, of course, unless everything's already, been constructed and we're just waiting on the last little bits. Otherwise, I think, yeah, we're going to be looking at delays as a result.
Yeah. Someone, Metzgirl in the chat said parts are scarce at the moment, and she raises a valid point. Because so many of these console parts are made overseas, right, and then brought in to the U.S., or maybe even if they're assembled overseas, it doesn't make a difference, that has caused a slowing of the production of these things. And so it is a very, very real possibility that we see these delayed. It messes up Sony's quarter four profits if it was going to be released in December. It does the same thing for any console, or rather any game maker, who is going to release a big title during that Christmas holiday. But ultimately, health comes first, right? So, I mean, we can wait a few months for the PS5 if it means that it can be produced in safe conditions. And same thing for the Xbox as well. So we'll have to see what happens.
To that end, Spenis does say about the previous point that it's entirely possible for Uncharted release, but Nathan Drake is also retired.
Spoilers!
Unless it's either a continuation of somebody else's story or the beginning of somebody else's story, it wouldn't be something that would be made.
And Spenis makes a really valid point. Sorry for those who have not played Uncharted 4 yet. But spoiler alert, Nathan Drake is indeed retired after that fourth game, and he decides to focus on other things. So, but Spenis, to that point, they did make the spin-off that had Chloe and Nadine, and so we'll see if they expand that universe, maybe with them, maybe they do something and Nathan makes like a guest appearance. But you're right, he did retire, and people are already upset in the chat at Spenis right now.
Well, when, how long ago was the game released wherein that spoiler occurred?
In my opinion, it's that game has been out long enough.
Yeah, no, I agree.
That I don't feel too bad about it.
I agree. There comes a certain point in time where it's on you, the speaker, to not spoil things. And then there comes a time where it's on you, the listener, to be proactive about the things you feel passionate about. So,
still worth playing.
Yeah.
If you haven't played it yet. Last news story of the week. This is on GameInformer.com by Andrew Reiner. About download speeds, Mac. This says, as lockdowns sweep across the globe to try and fight the COVID-19 pandemic, the number of people who are online has increased dramatically, so much so that countries are concerned that the internet could break. In Europe, Netflix is reducing streaming quality for 30 days. Netflix believes the move will lower its traffic by 25%. On a global scale, Google is defaulting all streaming to standard quality, but viewers can select a higher quality as they watch. Now Sony is joining the cause in Europe, announcing today that it is slowing and delaying game download speeds. In a statement on PlayStation blog, Sony Interactive Entertainment president and CEO Jim Ryan said, quote, "We believe that it is important to do our part to address internet stability concerns as an unprecedented number of people are practicing social distancing and are becoming more reliant on internet access." What are your thoughts, Mac? Do you agree with this?
So, on the one hand, game downloads. The video games do tend to be pretty sizable downloads. Like, sometimes you'll download a 45 gigabyte game, and then there's a 60 gig day one patch before you can even run it. But I hope that's what they're talking about, because I could understand that thinking if it was the game download. But video games themselves are significantly less of a burden. Even the online, like your worst case scenario MMORPG thing, is going to be using up less bandwidth than the crappiest, you know, live streaming from television, YouTube, Netflix, or what have you. Yeah. So video games aren't really the problem. It's the streaming of the, you know, of video that happens to be the biggest burden.
100%.
But I mean, I guess if it's the downloads slowing that down, I can kind of see where they're coming from, but definitely a shame.
Yeah, so Uncle Ruckus says in the chat, he says, "I think it's dumb with video streams since the computers that run these servers and the other services should just be able to run under that type of load." I don't know if that's the same argument, but I respect that opinion. I think more they're concerned about the amount of available bandwidth worldwide and the internet quote-unquote breaking, Ruckus. It's not about the computer's ability to handle it. It's about how much bandwidth is available. Now, Mac, here's where I disagree with this. There was a tweet that went out this week that was pretty controversial, and it was someone who did not appear to be a gamer saying something to the effect of, "Gamers should try to play at non-peak times as much as possible to prevent excess use of bandwidth." And I'm going to find the tweet after the show and tag you so you can see exactly the wording. But everyone basically tore that person up, as they should have.
Nonsense.
Which, you know, everyone's using the internet. And video games ultimately don't use more download space, or rather more stream space, than Netflix does. If you're streaming a Netflix movie or a Hulu movie in high quality. That was just, in my opinion, someone trying to go after gamers for doing what they love. So, anyway, let us know what you think in the chat about that. That has been our news for the week. Over to you, Mac.
All right. Well, let's take a little look into the past. For video game history today, I have one game I want to talk about that was released this week in years past. Specifically, Rainbow Six Vegas 2. So I'm not the biggest first-person shooter kind of guy. This we know, Mr. Nice Guy.
I know. I wish you were, though.
But Rainbow Six Vegas 2 has a very interesting place in history. Specifically, because when it was released, there was a huge debacle with its copy protection. We're going to talk about that. I'm going to try and avoid being too technical on this and speak rather generally, but it's an interesting chapter. So, for starters, Rainbow Six Vegas 2, published by Ubisoft, they used what was known as the Direct-to-Drive anti-piracy software. And the way that it worked was that the game, when you would boot it up, it would prevent the game from running unless it detected the disk inside of the CD drive in your computer. And so we're talking about 2008 or so.
Sure.
So we've got, you know, most people still have CD drives. Physical drives are still a big thing. However, digital copies were a thing that were being sold as well. And it may surprise some people to know that that the digital release of Rainbow Six Vegas 2 also included the Direct-to-Drive anti-piracy software. And anybody who purchased it digitally was unable to play their copy because it would look for it. It would look for the data. It would look for the disc, and the disc wasn't there. And that wound up being kind of a big sticking point.
Yeah, that's a problem. That's a problem.
And obviously, what Ubisoft was going for is, you know, is, oh, you don't have the disc? Well, no video game for you, you dirty pirate. But in this particular case, it kind of bit him in the backside. To make things more amusing, though, for years, Ubisoft had taken a very, very strict stance on no CD cracking, which was a popular thing in the early 2000s to do. You crack the game, you patch it so that it doesn't rely on sort of CD checks or the CD itself. But not only were they expressly denounced it and aggressively pursued people who did it, but also even the mention of no CD cracking on Ubisoft's, you know, consumer support forums and the like would get your account banned. So it is, of course, quite ironic. Well, maybe not like rain on your wedding day, but
Mac, what is up with the references today, man? First Britney Spears, now Alanis Morissette. Come on now. I'm going to throw some hip hop references in to even things out.
It certainly was definitely interesting that when they released a patch for this horrible situation of the requirement for this, you know, direct to drive anti-piracy software, that when people took a look at the actual patch, what they had done was they had, Ubisoft had taken the no CD crack from pirates and had just turned around and given that to the community. For years, they had said no CD cracking is going to destroy our company. And then for whatever reason, they decided that not only could they not do it without CD cracking, but they were going to give you this no CD crack executable in order for you to do. And how do we know that? Because people looked at the code and it still had the credits of the hackers who did it in there. So, yeah. They took what that darn pirate community came up with and packaged it as their own creation and certainly stonewalled anybody who called them out on it for quite some time. But Rainbow Six Vegas 2, an interesting moment in Ubisoft's history and definitely an interesting chapter that was, you know, that happened somewhat frequently. These DRM things tend to get you into trouble down the line, but I don't want to go on too long and make this a soapbox, but rather just to say there's maybe something you didn't know about Rainbow Six Vegas 2 released this week in years past. So a bit of video game history for you.
That was dope, dude. I did not know any of that, and that was really cool to hear, sincerely. Well, cool. We'll move on to our next segment. A segment we like to call the topic of the week, where we dive deeper into something that's relevant in gaming and give our opinions on it. Now, Mac, we've gotten some really, really important, really, really beloved games that were released this past week, mm-hmm. or past week and a half. We got Doom Eternal, we got Animal Crossing, mm-hmm. and we also got Half-Life Alyx. Now, you shared a story with me, and I want to give you the opportunity to share that before I dive into this news story, if you would like.
Thanks. So, as you know, I used to do technology reporting, and I had press credentials. It was really cool. As a result of this, I had the opportunity to get Mr. Nice Guy and I into some places that we maybe wouldn't have otherwise been able to get into. For example, we had press passes for E3 back in the early 2010s, and this was before anybody could go. You had to have, you know, had to have credentials, and also into a GameStop expo. That one I think you could get into, but
you just had to pay.
Yeah, but if you were press, you didn't have to pay, and you could get access to some more things. Well, yeah. I had thought that I remembered it being that I got this thing from E3, but I'm pretty sure Mr. Nice Guy has the story right that I won it at the GameStop expo. But at one of those two events, I received a Steam card with a Steam redemption code on the back of it. And when I won it, the person was just like, that will give you all the Valve games. And I was just like, oh, okay, cool. So, like, all the Valve games that they've already released? And the person said, no. All Valve games, all of them, even the ones they're going to release in the future. And I was like, oh, okay. I took that home and thought, like, that's going to happen. But when I redeemed it in, I think I hung on to it for like 8 months or so before I actually redeemed it. And then when I did use it, I had, you know, all the Half-Life games, yep. All the Left 4 Dead stuff, all that stuff added to my Steam library, right?
Sure.
And just earlier today, I was looking around in my Steam library, or it was rather, I think it was Sunday, actually. I was looking through my Steam library, and Half-Life Alyx was already there in my Steam library. And I did not buy it. So,
and it's a $60 new release.
Yeah, so as it turns out, apparently I do get future Valve releases as well. Although I do realize that maybe this has now made me a target for someone who wants to steal my Steam account.
Yeah, but no one knows what your Steam name is, except for a few of us. Nobody type it in the chat. Now, that's pretty cool. Now, Valve releases games so few and far between that's why it took you so long to realize.
Yeah,
right?
it had been like 4 years previous to 2015, or at least that's what it felt like, that Valve had released anything. So it just didn't, you know, just didn't occur to me at all.
Yeah. So on that note, as a backdrop for the news story or for the topic of the week, thank you for sharing that, because that's just such a cool story. Like, we didn't even believe the guy. We were like, oh yeah, it's going to give him all future games for free.
Yeah,
you know.
I remember us walking away from that, just being like, man, what a load. And I think on the car ride back, we were talking about it. It's just like, yeah, it can't be. But I mean, we'd never know. And by the time a new one comes out, we will have forgotten about this.
Right. And apparently it just popped up in there. Free $60 game. Well, cool. So the news story this week comes from Polygon.com by Ben Kuchera. And it deals with Half-Life Alyx. Am I pronouncing it right?
I think so.
Okay, cool. So here's what he says. He says, you need a virtual reality headset to play Half-Life Alyx, for now. But PC games end up in places that are often very far from where they began, and no one knows this better than Valve's Robin Walker. Walker co-created the original Team Fortress mod for Quake before working on Team Fortress Classic and Counter-Strike for Valve, as well as many of the Half-Life releases. He's keenly aware that someone out there right now is likely working very hard to modify a version of Half-Life Alyx that can be played on a standard screen with a mouse and keyboard. Quote, I know it's going to happen, Walker told Polygon. The bigger question is what the fans will think of this ported version of the game. And I'll just read the other quotes. It says, it will clearly demonstrate to people why we did this in VR, Walker said. It will be a very crisp way of seeing all the stuff we got from the move into VR. If people play a modded version on a standard display and say this is just as good, that will teach me a lot. I will realize that I'm wrong, and we didn't get as much as we thought. And I love to know whenever I'm wrong. So, Mac, Half-Life Alyx, to give people in the chat a background, it takes place in between, what, Half-Life 1 and 2, I believe?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, and basically it's getting rave reviews, for those who don't know. It got a 10 from IGN. It's getting really, really good reviews. It's beloved so far, and it's only on VR. Now, Mac, my first question for you is, do you think this game will be ported, number one, to be playable another way? And number two, why is Valve so cool with people doing this type of work with their games?
Well, number one, life finds a way. And number two, you know, I don't know, Mr. Nice Guy. I don't have an answer to that.
So I think that Valve, I think they're just dope people. I think that they are just awesome men and women who want people to enjoy their stuff. No, they don't want people to necessarily enjoy it for free or enjoy it illegally, but they seem like they're just okay with people modding their product and making it quote unquote better. Giving different experiences. I mean, some of their coolest stuff has come as the result of mods using the Source engine, right? Now, Mac, you and I were talking before about how there's no way that they do not make this available to a wider audience by making it available on something other than VR.
Yeah, we said that several months ago when we were talking about the release itself.
Yeah, and it sounds like that's not in the cards for them. Does that surprise you?
It does. I honestly would have expected us to hear something, you know, to hear just that kind of a thing, that port was coming from them. So, yeah I'm surprised.
And now, I do not own a VR headset. And I'll be honest, when I saw that this game was out and that it was doing so well, and I am interested in it, I was curious. I was like, I wonder what VR headsets are going for right now. They're going for at least, you know, $400 or $500. And to me, that is way too much to pay for a single game. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, VR doesn't really have as many killer apps as people thought it would. And like Uncle Ruckus just said in the chat, he said, I want a normal version of that game because I can't afford a VR headset and don't have the space. And those are the two things that stop VR, in my opinion, from being more widely accessible, is one, the price, and two, people need a big enough room where they can play the game without running into walls, knocking over their computer. And I guess the third thing, Mac, would be a lot of people may not have a VR-ready PC, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if this story becomes canon, if it starts to be recognized more widely as canon, Mac, how is Valve going to bridge the gap for those who missed out on this when we potentially do get Half-Life 3? Are they just going to do like a video catch-up series? Are they going to have a demo that you can play? Like, what are they going to do? They've got to let people know the story, right?
Well, honestly, I don't know as anything that we're going to get in this is going to be so important to Half-Life 3's story. So I don't know as it's necessarily going to need to be included. I think it'll be cool, but I don't think it'll be 100% necessary.
Yeah, okay. So last question. And this is kind of like a derivative question, but I want to know from the chat, like, why is it that there are some companies who are so open to modding and some companies that are just completely the opposite, like want to take their ball away from everyone and go play with it by themselves? And I personally love Nintendo. I grew up a Nintendo kid.
I didn't even have to say it, y'all.
Right, but Mac, here's the thing. We've seen so many passion projects, so many fan projects where people have started to remake a Nintendo game or to use Nintendo property, not even in an attempt to get profit, but like someone was using the Unreal Engine at one point to make a remake of Mario 64, and it got shut down. I believe someone put out a Mega Man. Wasn't there a Mega Man Maker game? Did that get shut down as well?
Nope, it's still going strong.
Oh, it's still going, so they let that one slide. Mm-hmm. But,
yep,
I mean,
Capcom let that slide.
Who let that? Yeah, technically that's not a Nintendo property, you're right. But there have been other Nintendo properties where people tried to do things to mod, and they got shut down. Why is Nintendo so hard and Valve is so laid back with this?
Well, so Moocher thinks that some companies are afraid that the mod will catch on and be bigger than the actual game, and maybe it's a pride thing. Ish Mobile says some companies realize, and I'm very inclined toward both Moocher and Ish Mobile here, some companies realize the community makes it better. Some don't realize that.
Yeah. Okay. And Uncle Ruckus said the Duck Hunt VR game came out with a normal version later on, but I don't know how late it's going to be. I wonder if Nintendo allowed that, if that was a Nintendo sponsored game or not, because that sounds like the type of thing that they would shut down immediately. But anyway, that was our chat about Half-Life, Alex. Mac, are you going to try to find a friend out there who has a VR headset so you can play this game, or are you not even that worried about this one?
You know, I'm not that worried about this one. I would love to try it. I think what I'll do is I'll find a friend that has a VR set. I'll share my Steam library with them, and then I will spend a weekend with this friend and we will enjoy it together.
That's the way to go. Well, that has been our topic of the week. Mac, back to you.
All right. Well, let's take a look at a crowdfunding project that's trying to get off the ground. I'm going to post a link in the chat so that you guys can mouse over there and take a peek. Mr. Nice Guy and I are going to talk about some of the virtues and the vices and let you know whether or not we think this should be kicked out of here or kickstarted, and you need to do the same. We will call for a vote at the end, so let's start with Sea of Stars. It is, for those of you who know these games, I would characterize it as Chrono Trigger style meets Super Mario RPG combat. For those of you who haven't, In Chrono Trigger, beloved game for the Super Nintendo, some of the real defining aspects of it are, I would say, overland battles and combat synergies. And then for Super Mario RPG, turn-based battles with quick time events kind of really fleshes out what I'm talking about with Super Mario RPG combat. So currently, this game, Sea of Stars, 250% funded. Made by the makers of The Messenger. As a matter of fact, it's a prequel to The Messenger.
Yep.
Among some of the things that they put in here, it's $25 if you want a digital copy. If there are any early copies left, which there aren't, it's $25 for the copy.
How much were the earlier ones?
Earlier ones were like $18.
Okay.
But, you know, digital copy when it's released. They promise in it that there's going to be no grinding, saying that combat difficulty and character progression are going to be tied to the storyline rather than experience points. So you won't have to worry about grinding in this RPG, unlike many others.
Mac, there ain't nothing wrong with a little bump and grind.
I'm inclined to agree with you.
I told you I would shoehorn a reference in. Told you.
And you did. You delivered. Now, let's see. They're going to have 6 characters in the game. One thing that's interesting about if you're backing at an upper tier is they do come with the option of having them design a special statue with a message in the game to in a kind of a graveyard-ish area. And they specifically mention this, that you could leave a message for someone else, or you could leave a message for players, or you could use that to leave like a monument in the game to a loved one or something like that, which I thought was an interesting type of an upper tier reward to offer. But one thing that I do want to highlight is they are planning for release on PC in the, you know, neighborhood of March 2022, so in a couple of years. And they also said release for PC and consoles, and I'm going to quote them directly, "We are keeping close watch, have extensive porting experience, and fully intend on supporting all current generation platforms with Sea of Stars." And that's direct from them. They haven't said what consoles will be supported, but they say, we know how to do it, and we will support all current generation platforms with the game Sea of Stars.
Dude, that's a good question, because this will come out after new consoles are out.
Indeed, it absolutely will. So it's one of those where, we'll see what actually comes of it or comes out from it. I do quite like it. It looks really nice.
So this is one that I was actually familiar with, and I'm really glad you chose this because, I'm going to kind of give away my thoughts. It looks awesome. And The Messenger was a game, I feel like it was like a B game, right? Like if I was giving it a rating, it was like a 7.5 out of 10. Only because it came at a time when I had just gotten done playing like Dead Cells and Hollow Knight on the Switch and a bunch of other really, really good games. But when I look back on it, The Messenger, if it had come out in a year where there were not a lot of other good games, it would have probably been an Indie Game of the Year candidate. And if I remember correctly, Celeste also came out that year. So it was like The Messenger, Celeste, Red Dead Redemption, Spider-Man, God of War. It was 2018.
That's tough competition.
Yeah, and so I feel like The Messenger maybe didn't get as much critical acclaim as it should have. So I'm excited that these folks did well enough to be able to put out another game, even if they are doing it through Kickstarter. I think that this game is going to be phenomenal, and it looks beautiful, and it's going to be a ton of fun to play on the Switch. I hope that it is longer than The Messenger, and I hope that it's a little bit deeper. I hope that it's not just a quote-unquote RPG for the sake of being an RPG. You know what I mean? Like, I hope that they actually really give you some customization and character building as far as the stats that you can build. But I'm excited for this, and I think that it's probably worth $25. I would have liked to have seen it $15, $20. But, you know, one thing I will say about them, when they released The Messenger, they actually gave you the DLC for free if you had already purchased it. And so I believe that they will probably do a similar thing here. And you're probably getting like 1.5 games for the price of one if you buy it now.
Well, if you do back at the $32 level, you'll not only get a key for Sea of Stars, but you'll also get a Steam key for the Messenger as well. So throw on an extra $7 on the $25 to get a copy of the Messenger.
Gotcha. And the Messenger is a great game, well worth $7 if you have not already played it.
I haven't already played it. I don't own it. And one sticking point about this is that they have not included a playable demo in Sea of Stars, which is definitely a strike against it.
Although they have
been able to put out a game before, so it's not 100% of a no-go for me, because I'm not like, oh, are you just going to run off with the money, or do you actually know how to do this? They clearly do know how to do it, but I would feel a lot better about backing the game if I had, especially where, you know, I mean, financing's kind of tight for a lot of people at the moment.
Sure.
I would feel a lot better about it if we were talking, you know, a playable demo along with it.
But to be fair, how much is financed so far?
250%.
Yeah. And what was their goal again?
92,000. They're 228,000.
Yeah, so I can't help but believe that they are using some of the leftover money from the Messenger's success to finance this. Like, I don't think this is a game that can be completed for $90,000 because they're a quality studio. I believe that they are using some of their success to finance this, which is impressive to me. It shows they were fiscally responsible. I will say this about The Messenger as well. It had a really, really solid sense of humor. Broke the fourth wall a little bit, and the dialogue was just great. So in addition to solid gameplay, the writing was pretty good. So I'm excited to see what they do with an RPG when you're a team of characters potentially traveling through a universe. I think this is going to be fantastic.
I'm on the fence, but I do say Kickstart at the end. Mr. Nice Guy?
Yeah, and once again, Mac, we want the people to vote as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they would like to. And I absolutely say kickstart this. I always miss out on these. Like, I wish I had known there was an $18 option, because I know this game is going to be good. Like, there's no way that it will be bad. I think
you know, sadly, there were still $18 options open at about 2 o'clock this afternoon.
Yeah, that's okay. It happens. But yeah, I would like to see this done. Now, here's the thing. Here's the one thing I have against this. They said 2022 is when this comes out.
Yep, 2022.
See, and that's my thing, Mac. That's too far away. That's 2 years, man. We have no shortage of stuff to play right now.
It's 2 years, but RPGs take a while.
And I'm not blaming them for that, but I'm saying, is there anyone in the chat who
does not... Mr. Nice Guy, if you want more depth, you're going to have to wait your 2 years.
Here's the thing, dude. Is there anyone in the chat who does not have an excess of games to play right now? No matter what console you're on, there's a ton of stuff to play. And so why are we encouraging people being asked to put down any amount of money for something that's 2 years away, especially when it is already funded at 250%, right? I'm all for supporting developers and I want this game to be made, but why would I do that? You know what I mean? That's my only problem with this. It's 2 years away.
Well, as quarantine continues, those backlogs continue to go down. So
I'm laughing at Mets Girl's comment.
Yeah, that you're impatient.
Impatient boy. I am. You know, but I mean, here's the thing. I have all the consoles. I have the Switch stuff, the Nintendo Switch Online. I have the Xbox Game Pass. I have the PS Plus and the Xbox Live. I'm getting new games every month. Plus the stuff that I've purchased that I haven't had time to finish. So to the premise of putting down any amount of money for something that's so far away just doesn't make sense. But that said, Kickstart. I think this looks great.
And it seems as though we have nary a detractor. It is a unanimous rousing Kickstart on everybody. You go, Sabotage Studios. This Sea of Stars looks great.
Well, it is time for our next segment, ladies and gentlemen. A segment that we like to call Nerdflex.
Woo-hoo.
A segment where one of you sends in a question or three to try to stump the hosts, myself and Maxion. Now, this week we do have three questions.
Three questions. They come to us courtesy of the Nerd Next Door.
The Nerd Next Door?
Who has a new video out.
Oh, so, really?
Yep.
Shout that out.
Yes. So, Shout out to the nerd next door.
Well, no, I meant where can we find that video?
Oh, I'll put a link. I'll put a link to it in the chat.
And he'll probably put it in the for those of you listening after the fact, he'll probably put it in the description of the show as well.
Never.
New net nerd next door. So, we'll go through these questions. We'll see if Mac and I can collaborate to get these. We do not know the answers in advance. Question number one. Who is usually attributed to the creation of the Game Boy? Now, I feel like that question is probably deeper than it sounds at the surface, right? Because my first instinct is Nintendo?
Yeah.
But I have a feeling that's probably not what the nerd next door was asking.
Maybe so, maybe no. What's the exact wording again?
Yeah, who is usually attributed to the creation of the Game Boy?
I mean, I could not tell you... I mean, Nintendo is what I would say, but I could not tell you any names if that's what it's looking for.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's Miyamoto specifically.
Yeah. Moocher says Gunpei?
And I do not know who that is. We're learning stuff from Moocher, and Moocher knows a lot about games. Do we want to just go and say Nintendo?
Yeah.
I don't feel like that's the answer. You know what I mean? Like, that seems way too
obvious.
Yeah,
it seems way easy, but...
The only way that would be more obvious is if it said who is usually attributed to the creation of the Nintendo Game Boy. But it does not say Nintendo Game Boy. It just says Game Boy. So, should we go with... Now, yeah, someone says Iwata. Spenna says Iwata.
Iwata, okay.
I know so, Iwata. Should we just go with Nintendo? I feel like that's way too easy.
You go with Nintendo, I'll go with Iwata.
Okay. Answer number one. Gunpei Yokoi.
Oh, wow. Gunpei Yokoi. Moocher. Dude. So Gunpei Yokoi.
I'm going to assume that's a Nintendo exec, and I feel like we both have some research we need to do.
Clearly.
To learn that. So, okay, we're 0-1, and that's okay. Question number two. What game series connects Grimoire of the Rift and the War of the Lions?
What game series connects?
Yeah. What so game? War, yeah, go ahead.
War of the Lions, I believe we're talking Final Fantasy Tactics, War of the Lions. Okay. And Grimoire, I don't know that. I don't know what that is, but I know that Vagrant Story is set in the same universe as Final Fantasy Tactics. They're both set in the land of Ivalice. So okay. My assumption is that it's Vagrant Story that's the connecting point. But that being said, I mean... If we're talking Final Fantasy, because Grimoire might be a Final Fantasy game, so Final Fantasy Tactics, War of the Lions, Final Fantasy Tactics, the Grimoire. So it's either Final Fantasy Tactics or it's Vagrant Story, and I just don't know enough about the first title there to actually know what that game is talking.
Max, a freaking encyclopedia, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, that's, I mean, if I were an encyclopedia, I would, you know, I would have an actual answer. Moocher thinks it's Wild Arms. I'm not familiar with any connection between the Final Fantasy Tactics series and Wild Arms, but yeah, it could be.
Grimoire of the Rift.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No idea.
It almost sounds like it should be an MMO. Like, those sound like MMO expansion titles. But I know it's not. So I'm going to defer to you. We're going Final Fantasy or Vagrant Story. Which one?
Tell you what, you go Vagrant Story, I'll go Final Fantasy Tactics.
Sounds good. Let's see what the answer is. And the answer is Final Fantasy Tactics, Mac.
Cool, cool.
Question number three. In Wind Waker, what does the Hylian text on Phantom Ganon's sword mean?
Whoa.
Yeah, now this is tough because it doesn't even say what the Hylian text says, or there's no symbols or anything. It just says, in the Wind Waker, what does the Hylian text on Phantom Ganon's sword mean?
So I haven't played Wind Waker. Wind Waker is something that that my neighbor actually played, and I, you know, hung around a couple of times to observe some of his playing of the Wind Waker. But I I don't know. I'm sure it's something that they, like, reference in a cutscene in Wind Waker. Mr. Nice Guy, did you play Wind Waker?
Yeah, but it's been a long time.
Okay, like, but, years. That's no excuse. That means this one's on you.
That's a GameCube game.
There was also a Wii release.
There was, that's true. They came out simultaneously, I believe. Actually, was it Wii or was it Wii U? I think it was Wii U. They made a remake, I believe. But anyway,
Witcher says, knowing how the Japanese name things, probably something like Soul Consumer.
I'm going to assume it's something like Evil One or Dark One, because this is Phantom Ganon.
And you know what? In that, let's say something. I'll go something like Hero Slayer.
Okay.
Ooh, Ishmobile, Destroyer of Worlds.
We got some good guesses in the chat. Let us know. Tweet at us what you thought the
but
answer was.
But honestly, Destroyer of Worlds sounds perfect, especially because, you know, that's what Ganon's whole thing is.
Yeah. Ishmobile probably just Googled it and just cheated.
No, Ishmobile would never.
Yeah, he would. Yes, he would. Yes, he would. I would if I was watching live.
No, anyway, Ishmobile, I am going with yours. Destroyer of Worlds, that's mine.
All right, I'm going to go with Dark One or Evil One. I'm going to cheat and have two options. So sweet. The answer is, what the heck? Zabora Gabora, the blacksmiths from Majora's Mask.
Oh,
that's a tough one.
Interesting.
Well, Mac, you know what? The good thing about going 1-for-3 is it shows that this is legit. We get hard questions.
Yeah.
It's hard to come up with the answers. So if you're interested, send us some questions to Two Nerds in a Pod on Twitter or twonerdsinapodcast@gmail.com, and we can read your questions next week. That has been Nerdflex, Mac. Back to you.
All right. Well, let's now turn for a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. And it is funny that we talked about Nintendo earlier and having takedowns because, and I did not know that we were going to discuss that beforehand, but what I prepared was a quick discussion of the difference between copyright, patent, and trademark, and two of those three things that was actually an issue this week. So let's talk a little bit, start at the top with some copyright. Copyright applies to original works of authorship, in this case, video games. Absolutely. It does not protect the underlying ideas, just the work itself. This lasts the life of the author plus 70 years. Now, back in 1776, believe it or not, the Constitution actually has a copyright clause in it, a clause talking about how copyright will be extended to authors. And in some of the early copyright things, they were like, hey, 14 years sounds great, but you've got the ability to renew it once for an extra 14 years. So you're looking at a total of 28, right? In 1831, Noah Webster of Webster's Dictionary fame, he lobbied real hard, which lobbying is a term for paid a lot of money to influential people in order to change laws, to make it so that the increase was from 14-year blocks to 28-year blocks. So we're, you know, we're getting up there around 50-something odd years. In 1976, we got not only another extension on copyright law, but that's also when we put the fair use idea into actual law. 1976, fair use became a part of copyright. But it went from that, you know, about 50-ish years to 75 years or life of the author plus 50 years. So 50 years after the death of the author. And don't, you know, Disney spent a lot of money pushing for that one. Then it got changed again in the year 1998 to be 120 years. Or life of the author plus 70 years. Again, another huge push financially by Disney to get that extended. But also, Time Warner, Universal, Viacom, and in an interesting twist, all professional sports leagues, NFL, NHL, NBA, they were also big pushers behind extending that copyright as well. So, So that's just a little bit on the copyright side of things. So copyright original works of authorship definitely exploded in recent years. Used to be different, but now it is what it is. So patent, though. Patent is the limited duration property right on an invention. There are multiple different types of patents, but design patents are the ones that basically apply to video games. Design patents last 15 years from its issue date. Cool. And then trademark. Trademarks protect words, phrases, symbols, or designs identifying the source of the goods or the services of one party and distinguishing them from those of others. Trademark registration can continue forever as long as you decide to renew it each unit time. I don't remember off the top of my head what exactly the unit was, but you know, per unit time. Unless you don't renew your trademark, you don't lose your trademark. So, Nintendo shuts down a fan-made game, like the Unity version of... like the Unreal version of Super Mario 64, or even just a, say, for example, like what happened this week, a fan-made model of Mario inside of Sony's game maker Dreams. That's copyright. A fan recreates, this happened this week as well, a fan recreates the NES motherboard and designs a new one using currently available chips to replace old/destroyed consoles. That, the applicable realm of law, is patent. And that's perfectly okay, and has been ever since about the year 2000-ish, for reasons that we are going to cover actually in next week's Legalese. So we'll talk about Famiclones, as they're called. And then the third one, Nintendo, the title of the company itself, in that familiar red oval, or say the titles of their video games, the logos of their consoles or games, and so on. Well, that's trademark. So, copyright, patent, trademark. The three different things. And, well, that's just a little bit of legalese for you.
Fan-freaking-tastic! Mac, people in the chat really like your singing. While you were doing the legalese, they were just talking about your angelic voice, not even listening to the legal stuff you were saying.
So, apparently I can sing my way out of any situation.
That's what they say in the chat. Well, cool.
Good to know.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thank you so much for tuning in to episode number 132 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the, what was it, in the multiverse, Mac?
Yeah, in the multiverse, for sure.
In the multiverse, that's right. Well, we got one last segment before we go. It's called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing. And this week, I'm legitimately in need of your help because I need a new show to binge. I need something, I'm looking for something like action, like nerdy. So let's talk, Mac, about the things we've been into, and if you're here, you have a job to do. Let us know in the chat what stuff you've been playing on PS4, Xbox, Switch, PC, and mobile, and what stuff you've been watching on all of the streaming services on YouTube, etc., etc. Mac, do you want to lead off?
Sure. So I haven't been playing many games, however, I've certainly been ramping up to play some tabletop RPGs. A lot of groundwork, little bit here and there, which we'll certainly be talking about more later, but no video games to speak of. As for what I've been watching, though, Mrs. the Mac and I, we are working our way into season 2 of Once Upon a Time, always watching that Better Call Saul, and a little bit of Star Trek all the time, just to relax. Star Trek is very soothing, and Deep Space Nine, because of its very, darker tones, because, you know, the station is kind of gray, things are, you know, the uniforms are darker, everything about the series is darker. It's very good for if you need something to play in the background and fall asleep to, because the colors are very muted, so it's great for that.
Well, as for me, I have been... What have I been watching? Let's start with what I've been playing first. I've been playing a lot of Teamfight Tactics, Mac. That game is phenomenal. Here's the elevator pitch, y'all. For anyone who has ever played League of Legends, it's a auto-battler, which if you've ever played like auto-chess, you know, you put some characters on the board, they fight each other automatically, and then based on, you know, numbers and formulas and things like that, one team comes victorious. It's 8 people each doing a free-for-all. You do 1v1 matches versus the other 8 people throughout the game. You battle a computer every once in a while to get extra gold and things like that. You upgrade your characters. There's a shop where you can buy new characters. And every time you get three of a character, it upgrades it to a level two. So that's the gist of the game, right? You want to be the last man, last person standing. And I've been playing it with my brother. We've been having a blast. Also, Mac, I did get back into Cuphead on the Nintendo Switch. That's a solid indie game. Extremely, extremely challenging, but having fun with it. And then, Mac, like you said, you and I did a character building session the other day for an upcoming game that we have going. And I am extremely, extremely excited with the character that I have built. So as far as what I have been watching, I'll tell you what, Mac. Sometimes you just got to watch those old school 90s shows. They're corny. They're like after school specials. But my wife and I have really been enjoying some Boy Meets World on Disney Plus. And Better Call Saul and The Walking Dead. Oh, and also there's a really funny cartoon I've been watching a little bit of called F is for Family. And if anyone likes Bill Burr, stand-up comedian, it's a show that he voices the father on. And I believe he's the writer as well, head writer. So it's a solid show. That's it for me, Mac. What are people in the chat into?
All right, so as for playing, Overwatch is helping Moocher stay connected with his friends. Mets Girl's enjoying Breath of the Wild, absolutely, and GURPS. Ishmobile's been enjoying Dark Souls Remastered and Subnautica, and GURPS, woohoo. Little hint, hint there. As for watching, The Office on Netflix, The Expanse, and Doctor Who. So there are some things, Mr. Nice Guy, I think you should probably go for The Expanse. Expanse is probably a good one to get into.
Nice. Is that one of the, is that the one where they're in outer space and they land on a ship and they don't remember where they are?
Nope. I think that might be Dark Matter.
Oh, okay.
But The Expanse, it's good stuff. You'll enjoy it. It's set in our solar system but in the future. Space travel is somewhat limited, but I don't want to spoil it all. It's good. It's good stuff. And Christian Avasarala, keep your eyes open for her because she is objectively the best character in the whole show.
Nice. Well, we got Uncle Ruckus with a late addition. He says Doom Eternal and Shameless is what he's been playing.
Doom Eternal playing Shameless and King of the Hill for watching.
Oh, my mistake. And Mets Girl agreed with me that Boy Meets World, solid show. So, Mac, do you want to take us away since you brought us in as well?
Oh, no, I can't take both your jobs. You've got to take us away, sir.
It's our job, but I will take us away. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thank you for tuning in to episode number 132 of Two Nerds in a Pod. If we could ask a quick favor of you who are here live and listening after the fact, if you like the show, share it with a friend. Please leave a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast service. Maybe put a few nice words in the review. That really helps us out with the search results. We'll see y'all next week. Same bat place, same bat time, same bat rhymes. Keep it nerdy, y'all. Deuces.
See ya.